Okay, so Mazel Tov to Avigdor, if he's listening in, you know, we sang it for him. And, you know, we won't tell everybody, we won't tell Avigdor that Itamar wasn't here when the song was being...
maybe it's Palace.
Okay. Anyways, so before I begin with, we said we were going to try to do some avos. So this, of course, leads right in. So I just want to make two or three comments just about our last topic. I'd like, as I say, another opportunity to pursue that one further anyway, because the idea of what is emunah and what is bitachon is just a fascinating topic in its own right, intrinsically important, and also. It reflects, in broader terms, Jewish thinkers, what their perspective was, particularly this dialectic between hishtadlus or ein som chen alanes and bitachon. As I mentioned at the very end last time, sometimes, historical experience can bring that out. That doesn't mean historical experience is the posek and the machria of this issue, chas v'shalom, but sometimes the experience that individuals live through, and certainly communities, can highlight different perspectives on this topic. And it's not a coincidence that sometimes we find patterns among whether it's geographically or historical periods of one emphasis or another, and that's perfectly legitimate. That too is part of Masorah, which is our second theme of the day. And in addition, as I was trying to say the last time, even whatever your exact parameters are, clearly both of these concepts are very important, and in most cases they don't really contradict. And what's critical to understand is that bitachon is really not just an issue when there's a clash, and you have to make a very difficult decision, whether to do X or Y. Mostly, 90% of the bitachon issues are issues of attitude. They're attitudinal issues, in other words, of just how you perceive your life and how do you perceive, your relationship with the Rabbono Shel Olam. And as I said, it's usually in the situations where your actions are determined anyway by other things, that how your self-image is and how you relate to it becomes the critical issue. Do you feel that there's no hashgacha, or do you feel that there is, a Rabbanu Shalom which is, who is guiding you, Hashem Yireh. And that, the Beincha LeBein Atzmecha, when you're looking in the mirror, sometimes that's where the real bitachon issues are mostly decided. It's when things are either, dire and difficult and you don't have control, but you still are trying to, preserve a sense of optimism and a sense of faith, that's where some bitachon comes in, and exact opposite circumstances too. When there are triumphs and successes, the ability to keep that in perspective and not to say kochi v'otzim yadi, which is one of the things that the Ramban in the other places says. The Ramban speaks again, as we talked in Parshas Shoftim, about Muhammad, about both of these. The Yare V'rach Le'bav, the Yare part, which I'll get back to in a second. When things seem, scary, but, you have to have the bitachon in the Rabbanu Shalom. But equally, in the times where things are successful, and you're not, you're aware, you're bimode, and you're expressing hoda'ah, those are also a function of bitachon, two opposite life circumstances. And most of the bitachon cases have to do with that. The same thing is true on the ein somchen al hanes / hishtadlus part. Right? In most cases, you don't really have a choice, and it's not a question of charting a course. It's a question of how you look at things and, what you do. So A, we should have an appreciation for the Rabbanu Shalom's hashgacha, and the sense that, it's not coming to us, so we don't want to put him in, whatever that means, kivyachal, in situations like, kind of a blackmail, we put ourselves in situations where we require nisim, is really a lack of appreciation. It's really a way of showing that we're exploitive than appreciative. But even more important than that is that the idea of hishtadlos reflects, number one, a certain level of responsibility in the world, and a recognition also that the world, you know, matters. Again, if you take the view that the world is just a trochlin, and it's just this obstacle course, to getting to where we really need to go, olam haba, and that it's fundamentally, wired with all sorts of dangers and so on, and there's not much that we can do. So, even the hishtadlos part becomes very difficult. If we have a more optimistic view of the world, and especially of our ability to affect things, what the Kabbalists sometimes call misurta dilatata, right? Working down here to affect even mystically things, up high, but of course which has its rational analogs too. So then we understand very well that, hishtadlos isn't just, how you make decisions in very rare circumstances, but it's an approach to life. It's a can-do attitude, not out of gaiva, but out of the sense that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be involved in the world and to take responsibility and to be a junior partner. All of these things are a function of hishtadlos. So in most cases, you have to have both of these things and cultivate them and, kind of flesh out their implications. Rarely you have the actual clash, and there, the factors, the counterfactors matter. That's one of the things I was trying to bring out, that maybe, part of the Ramban story, and certainly part of Ben Yonah's and the Radak story, is, how difficult is it, to overcome certain pressures of Eretz Yisrael, putting someone else's, tznius and other things in jeopardy, etc. Afal Bichain, I do believe that there is a machlokas, even though a lot of it can be attributed to the, assigned value of those different factors. But, and that, machlokas itself, I think, is very much the Ramban L'shitaso, as I said about his view of Hashkacha and Neis Nistar and Tamim Tiyam Hashem Alokacha, and certainly his formulations about the difference between Yarei and Rach Levav, etc. So two other things just before we finish with that part of it is I mentioned that when we started that Rabbi Bachayev asks against the Ramban, isn't this against the Gemara Nadarim and the view of Chazal that the real punishment of Avraham Avinu and the reason that there was galus is because Bamei Daki Yirashena. But in light of what we were discussing, which is that the Ramban's view, it isn't just a question of how to emphasize and decision to make in a particular case, but A, it's the factors of leaving Eretz Yisrael, A, and B, the sense of larger sense of bitachon that you have. So in a way, Bamei Daki Yirashena, you might say, is just another manifestation of the same thing, because really Bamei Daki Rashena was looked at by Chazal as a little bit of a lack of bitachon. It wasn't just questioning whether Ribbono Shel Olam could do it, it was also part of this dialectic. Moreover, it was, is it conceivable that there wouldn't be an Eretz Yisrael which was going to be central right to the destiny of the Jewish people? Right, how could that even be questioned? What do you mean, Edaki Yirashena? Of course it has to be that way. So in a certain sense, one could argue that what the Ramban says, from his point of view, is not against the Gemara Nadarim, just that the Gemara Nadarim is a parallel manifestation of these two elements. That's number one thing I wanted to add. The other thing I wanted to add is something that the Ramban does not say again at all, but I'm trying to suggest in the Ruach of the Ramban, and this idea that we can take 80% or 90% of what a Rishon says and then project it a little further or add wrinkles to it, it is something very important, and it's again connected to our next topic of the concept of Masorah. But I'm glad it's actually, because I think it's a very important theme. It's really what we were also talking about yesterday in Raivin and Bali Nefesh and Tos Rosh, etc. We need to know what the Rishon says or the authority says, and we also need to be able to figure out what the Ikar Mahalach is and what's a prat or formulation that is more flexible. And then if we want, sometimes not as a matter of halachic authority, but in terms of our overall understanding, and not for the sake of political correctness, but truly, you know, because we think that it really coheres better with the system and with other positions as part of the Masorah. So then it's, you know, of course perfectly legitimate, you know, to fine-tune certain things. So this is, again, another example of that. I mean, the Ramban that I spoke about on Shabbos, which was, you know, Ate Yadati Ki Re Elokim Ata V'lo Chasachta Zbincha Es Yechidcha Mimeni, and the Ramban's idea about, you know, taking things, you know, Menakoach Alapoal, etc. So I just think it's very fascinating that given that the Ramban's own view in Shoftim, in the context of Muhammad, that, you know, a Yare is different than a Rachlev, right, and on the level of Bitachon. That a Rachlev is, you know, refers to the, you know, natural makeup, you know, emotional and psychological makeup of man. And, you know, some people are more queasy than others, some people are more panicky than others. You know, it's a function of nature, and it's also a function of experience and what's at stake. There could be all sorts of reasons why some people have an iron, you know, will, or an iron, you know, a grip on certain things, and others don't. And the same person in different circumstances also can respond differently. Basically, what the Ramban was arguing was being a rachlev is, you know, is one thing, but being a yare, that refers to not having sufficient bitachon. That you can be afraid in war. Most people are, I'm guessing. And, you know, we're afraid on the sidelines, so imagine the people who are on the front lines. Although it is different, but of course they're afraid. But what Ramban's saying is, rachlev is one thing, yare, which flows from a lack of bitachon. And again, that's a great example of what I was speaking of before, because it's nothing to do with the decisions that you make. It's an attitudinal thing. It's the way you go about fighting, you know, your war. You know, it's more than just not running away. You know, that has to do with bitachon. So in light of that comment of the Ramban, it occurred to me, you know, for a long time, that could be also a twist on the, again, the Ramban does not say this, it certainly doesn't say it here, I'm not aware that he says it anywhere else, but that could be a twist for the Ramban on the notion of Yiras Shemayim. The Yiras Shemayim, in a certain respect, is, you know, the antidote and the antithesis to, you know, somebody, you know, whose yira, you know, is a lack of bitachon. Because in a way, being a yare elokim is you know, asking to surrender, you know, your conceptual categories and your thinking to a higher order. And it's also, you know, asking for that of course is founded on or premised on a very high level of bitachon. So when you say somebody is a Yare Elokim, you know, he's not a Yare, he's a Yare Elokim. What you're also saying, I'm suggesting, is that he has a tremendously cultivated, you know, sense of bitachon. And in a way, that's really what we mean when we say about somebody in that circumstances, that he's not maharher, you know, achar the Rabbono Shel Olam. I mean, he doesn't know what's going on, and he doesn't know what's going to happen, and there's a lot at stake, but he's not second-guessing the Rabbono Shel Olam, meaning he has bitachon, basically. So I just think, again, the Ramban totally does not say this, but in the Ramban about Avram Avinu's chet, you know, in the context of going to Mitzrayim and saying, you know, that Sarah was his sister and so on, that it was a lack of bitachon, it's very fascinating that the ultimate nisayon of the Akeda, right, in a way is a tikkun for that, because it's ati adati, you know, maybe that was a lapse, or maybe we should reassess that even too. But, you know, ki yirei elokim, if in the context of the Akeda, right, he's not mahare racharecha, and he's able to pull this off, the Radak says, the yiras elokim in the Akeda isn't just yira, it's ava. And, the Netziv kind of says the opposite, but for the same reason. The Netziv says, what, Avraham Avinu needed credentials in Yiras Shemayim? You know, we already know all the things that he's done. So he says, yeah, but as somebody who had a close, as an Oev Hashem, you know, he could have used that position at least to ask some questions. But he chose to behave as a Yare rather than as an Oev. Right? The Radak says, again, this is a Yira, which is Ava. They're like, you know, opposites, but not really opposites. But the point is, Ramban says, you know, vayivaka atzei olav. There's a lot of this rizus going on, you know, with all of the pain and so on. So in a way, the Yiras Elokim of the Akedah is the ultimate act of, because, you know, the stiras are right there. And there's no way to really resolve them. All you can do, not a question of whether you're going to follow. The question is, can you follow enthusiastically and not ask the questions and still have bitachon that, you know, without understanding it, the Rabbeinu Shalom is, you know, knows what he's, you know, knows what he wants. So in a way, Ati Adati Kirei Elokim Ata is the answer, you know, to the lack of, to the other kind of yira that, you know, that Avram may have felt as a lapse, you know, which was a lack of bitach. But again, the Ramban does not say this at all. It's me, you know, using different Rambans to suggest a mahalach that, you know, if he were sitting here, you know, I think at least there's a chance that he would say, like, you know, good gezakt. And maybe he wouldn't, but even then I might say, but I still think it works in well, these different perspectives, and it's worth pursuing, and it fits into other things. Okay, so that's what I wanted to mention just on that. And again, I look forward to another opportunity, because I really would like to speak about the Chovas Halvavos, and again, in terms of Achrona, the Beis HaLevi, and, you know, there are some, the Chazon Ish, sort of safer, called Emunah B'Tachon, where there's a lot of really interesting things in the Rishonim and in the Achronim about Emunah and Bitachon and these issues that highlight a lot. But since the request was made that we should move to Avos and you know, try to use that as kind of a framework, so I'd like to move to that. And in a way, of course, the beginning of Masechet Avos, you know, fits in perfectly with this very idea of yesterday and today and Shabbos and the things that we sometimes do, by which I mean the mission Avos begins. Again, we'll try to keep I don't think I can do a Mishnah a week because there's just too much in each Mishnah, but as I say, we'll try to, you know, not linger just on one theme. You could do that also for a very long time, but we'll just, you know, we're just officially notifying that these aren't the comprehensive last words on the topic. But Moshe kibal Torah v'sinai m'sar li'Yoshua v'Yoshua l'zkenim l'zkenim l'neviim u'neviim m'saru l'anshei kneses agnola. Right? Hey mamru shlosha dvarim heven musunim badim hamidu tamidim harbe asu siag l'Torah. Okay, there's a lot there. What can I say? So let's start with the first half, which of course is an outline of the Masorah. Moshe kibal Torah v'sinai m'sar li'Yoshua Yoshua l'zkenim l'zkenim l'neviim neviim m'saru l'anshei kneses Agdola. So even before we get to any tochen, there are several things to point out. There are some factual questions. What do we mean? You know, what did Moshe Rabbeinu really hear from the Ribono Shel Olam? What did he pass on? What are the implications of that? What does that mean for, you know, a single, you know, very specific Masorah or Masorah of Klalim? We'll talk about those things also. But even before we get to that, what do we make of this methodology, you know, of Moshe Kibal Torah Misinai, Masorah Yoshua, this idea of Masorah? Why do we need this mode of transmission, you know, of conveying, you know, a Torah to Klal Yisrael, L'dori Doros? We can all understand that it comes, you know, at a big price. It's extremely difficult and challenging, and you know, confusion is part of it. Obviously, if everything had been written and written clearly, then there would be less room for mistakes and so on. The idea that you're going to trust, you know, an ongoing, you know, transmission across the generations, you know, with human beings with their faulty memory, you know, with their built-in, you know, filters, you know, in terms of their own personalities and inclinations, the you know, values and, you know, various trends which they're exposed to in the societies in which they live, all of this potentially wreaking havoc on the content of Torah. What's the point of it all? Was this the only way really to transmit, you know, the voluminous, you know, Torah? Couldn't write it all down. and therefore you have to do it this way, and it's all a b'di'eved? Or do we really think, you know, which we clearly do, that, you know, there could have been another way, and that this is an optimum way, with all of the challenges, and these are very significant challenges. Somehow, you know, entrusting people and, you know, doing this across the Doros, etc., has, you know, built-in advantages, not just for the transmission of the content of Torah, but the methodology and the orientation, the way that we look at, you know, what Torah is, the involvement of generations, etc., etc. So that's already the first thing that comes to mind when we read the beginning of this Mishnah. In addition to that, it's linguistically interesting. The question is whether it's, you know, just a coincidence or meaningful. Some of the Mefarshim think it's a little meaningful. And that is that, you know, there's something to say about the sentences. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, right? Umesora Yoshua. So there's a, you know, there's a Kabbalah and there's a Mesira. So we would have expected that, you know, going forward, we'd have the next generation, you know, which is Makabel and Moser, to the generation after, which is Makabel and Moser, etc. Now, if you want to save ink, so you might say, well, all that is implicit, and then you might want to drop the Mosar, you know, from the subsequent ones. Or, if you wanted to argue that ideologically, that Moshe Rabbeinu received everything, not only a Torah Hashem Tamima methodologically and principally, in terms of principles, in other words, but even in terms of details. And therefore, you know, you want to drop the Mesorah because the Mesaruah, because, you know, it might imply, you know, that there were, you know, changes or additions along the way, developments, let's say, along the way. And that's not the case. So it's, you know, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, right? Umesorah Yoshua v'Yeshua l'skedim l'skedim l'neviim, and so on and so forth. But the language of the Mishnah is actually mixed, right? Because you have Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai Umesorah Yoshua v'Yeshua l'skedim l'skedim l'neviim, and then you have u'neviim Misaruah l'anshe Knesset Hagdolah. So again, it could just be a literary thing because they're the last ones. So you're saying, each time, you know, you're saying, you know, et cetera, and, you know, then when you get to the last one, you know, we repeat it, you know, so that we'll know this is always what we meant. But there are some Mefarshim on the Mishnah who do make a note of it, and who at least ask this question, how come in some cases it's Kibbul HaMasar, in other cases it's not Kibbul HaMasar? Right. And just like, you know, the first question that I raised, like, why do we need this methodology? It's fraught with all sorts of challenges. Is there something principled about, you know, doing it this way in terms of the tochen, and especially, you know, the sense of bailus on and the relevance of and the connection of all the doros? So too, what I'd like to suggest, and again I'm touching on these things, we can other times explore them more fully, I guess, is that you know, one approach to the idea of Kibbul HaMasar, or sometimes saying Kibbul HaMasar and sometimes not, is very much connected to the first problem, is the idea that the Mekablim are not merely Mekablim, right? And not just because of the you know, inefficiencies that are endemic, you know, to human transmission. So, you know, you want a perfect Kabbalah, and then another Kabbalah, and another Kabbalah, and another Kabbalah. But, you know, Lemaisa, it's always challenging where you're going to get that. It's like, you know, when we were all children, you know, when we played, you know, Broken Telephone, I guess. Is that the name? Broken Telephone? Yeah, so now they say Broken Computer, or they still say Broken Telephone. Well, actually, telephones are really big today. They were bigger now than they were then. But that's because they're not telephones anymore. But, so Broken Telephone. So we know the problem. But, you know, just maybe the idea is that the methodology of Mesira, again, is intentional. And with all the difficulties, and we have to work very hard to try to keep the purity of the Mesorah and its accuracy as much as possible. But at the same time, that challenge also has its benefits in terms of involving each generation, allowing for the positive, constructive input, you know, of each generation. You know, we mentioned this on Shabbos, that, you know, most of the time we spend, you know, defending you know, the application of Masorah to a particular generation, being very cautious, you know, making sure that we filter out the cultural mores of a particular era to make sure it doesn't corrupt, that's not antithetical. But, you know, if we take a more optimistic, you know, posture, which, by the way, could flow from the perspective of bitachon, you know, that we spoke of before, we can also consider the possibility of, you know, an opportunistic engagement between, you know, modern culture, modern of whatever, you know, generation we're talking about, and Torah. Maybe there are certain things in every generation, you know, which maybe are particularly conducive to being understood based on advances in science and technology and based on cultural sensitivities or hypersensitivities that might apply. Again, so that, you know, while this is all fraught with great danger, you know, this human transmission, it also, you know, builds in a certain potential for, you know, for a more ambitious Yedias Hashem and Havanas HaTorah. And that's, of course, the ideal of what Masorah is supposed to be about. And on the same basis, one could argue that, you know, there are certain generations. I think in every generation there's an aspect of Kibbul HaMasar. We don't just look at the Makablim as, you know, very people with amazing memory and amazing, you know, integrity, you know, who, you know, transmitted with as little loss as possible, notwithstanding, you know, a broken telephone syndrome. But on the contrary, what we look at is this element of hashgacha and an element of, you know, intentional involvement of chachmei ha-mesorah shebechol dor v'dor in the process. And therefore, the right person at the right time. I mentioned to some people after the, you know, the post, I guess, that, you know, that I very much like the comment somebody brought to my attention of Rav Kook, Zichrono Livracha, of, you know, Elokai ad shelo notzarti eini chedai, that, you know, there's a certain kind of hashgacha, maybe the right people are born, you know, to their generation. You know, they're the ones who should be in their generation. Obviously, the people who are really masur to Torah and surrender to it as Yorei Elokim, and then as insiders, you know, can also be creative and determine, you know, how to apply the filters in both direction. But in some generations, at least, you know, the kibel is mostly, you know, koveya, the masar. And then, you know, in certain generations, when the changes are more radical, or you reach a certain point in the evolution, not revolution, but the evolution of Torah, so then it's time for a masar, you know, in addition to the kibbutz. So that some of the Mepharshim explain, I'll bring it in next week, that, you know, that's what we mean when we say kibbutz masar. The Netziv in particular, I should add, in his Hamikdavar, you know, is very into this idea, but it has roots in Chazal, and other people think that it's correct too, although you have to be killed about it. This idea that different eras of Jewish history, you know, emphasize different aspects of Torah. There was a Torah Shebichsav era and a Torah Shebalpeh era. You know, he sees the menorah, you know, very much as a paradigm for, like, different, you know, perspectives on Torah and Yahadus. You know, they all apply to all generations, but, you know, there's a particular era which, you know, this is accentuated, and that is, again, you have to be careful about these things, but those ideas are fascinating. And even if you don't say it exactly that way, in other words, there's a time for, you know, dialectical learning, and, you know, there's another time for, you know, informational learning and you know, analogy-oriented learning, you know, and pilpalistic learning, and so on and so forth. As long as these are, you know, operating on the basis of Masorah, as long as there's a kibel and an honest effort at kibel, an honest effort to, you know, incorporate and approximate, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu in each chain in the link. So the fact that here and there, you know, there's a, you know, a Rav Chaim on the horizon, or Rabbeinu Tam, or Rambam, whoever it is, you know, all that enhances, all that is maybe the reason for the first point, why we, you know, why we endanger the process to the extent that we do, so we can get, you know, the kind of payoffs, you know, that we're speaking of as well. So this idea of, you know, number one, why we have a Masorah. Number two, the idea that the Masorah, you know, allows for different darche alimud, let's say, in some cases more, you know, accentuated than others, the different part, the fact that there's a difference, in other words. So that it's kibble, 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 and then there's a masar, certainly post-Nevuah, right, post-Beis HaMikdash, that there could be different emphases, you know, which is kind of what the Netziv talks about, Pula Shel Torah, and so on and so forth. But even, you know, within Darkei Hollywood, is something which might be implied by the language of the Mishnah. Rashi, in his comment on the Mishnah itself, we're going to wrap up in just a minute, but Rashi, when he talks about Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, says, you know, Misara Li Yoshua. So Rashi says, and why Yoshua, and not Eliezer, and not Pinchas, and not the Shivim Zakenim? The Lama Nemar, Umisara Li Yoshua, Velo Lelazar, Velo Pinchas, Velo Shivim Zakenim, Hamisnabim Machana, Shalaratza Lamosra El Lemi Shahaya, Memis Atzmo Min Urav, Baale Chachma, the Kana Shem Tov Ba'olam Vizel Yoshua Shanamar Yoshua bin Nun, Nar Lo Yamish Mitocha Oel, etc. Hafa Bishaksiv Lagabe Pinchas Torres Emes Haisa Bafiu, meaning Pinchas was no slouch, right? But we knew of his, you know, Mesiris Nefesh and also of his Chachma. But Yoshua, right, was the only person who could be the Makabel from Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was unique, as we know, Moshe Emes Torasa Emes. He's more than a Navi. Maybe he's the only person, that's a topic in its own right also, whose Nevuah and whose Torah really could be, you know, two sides of the same coin, which implies something about his instinct for Torah as well as the halachic nature of his Nevuah. Again, a topic in its own right. But how do you ever get from anybody to Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? I mean, Moshe is fundamentally, in principle, right, the Adon HaNeviim. It's one of the two, really, of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna of the Rambam, you know, that there can be no Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, that there can be no abrogation of Torah's Moshe, because there is no Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu. So how do you ever get to that next step? You need somebody like a Yehoshua, right, who's Memis Atzmo Min Urav Ba'alei Chachma, the Kana Shem Tov Ba'olam, meaning the Kana Shem Tov Ba'olam is particularly interesting, meaning that that affects his character and his sense of responsibility. You know, he's not just an ivory tower person. He's going to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. He's taking over from Eved Moshe, and he's getting the, you know, Chazak V'Amatz, you know, pat on the back and directive, you know, from him. But more importantly is, you know, his hard work, you know, to be a painstaking transmitter of Moshe Rabbeinu's, and his devotion to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, the Nar LaYamish mitocha Ohel. So that's one element. Ben Yonah has another, you know, comment which is important. Bein Torah shebichsav, bein Torah shebalpeh, sha Torah beferusha nitna, shem lo kein yefshar lemeidabei, sha reksiv lo tigzol, v'chol nazikin bechlal oso alav. So this is a very fascinating for Ben Yonah. Ben Yonah basically says that, you know, this is the way the Rambam actually begins his Hakdama on Yalach Hazaka about, you know, Torah Shebichsavu Perusha Nirna, that part we know from Chazal, meaning the indispensability of the Masorah. But what's fascinating about the Ben Yonah is that he, the example that he gives, right? Because if you'd ask me to give you an example of the incomprehensibility of Torah Shebichsavu without Torah Shebalpeh, my best example is always this Parshas Mishpatim, which I don't think is a coincidence, meaning the irony is just so stark, because, you know, the one area of halacha which is the most universal, namely Jewish civil law, every system has to have an analogous civil law. Some Rishonim, including the Ramah, you know, think that ideally everybody should have Choshev Mishpat, everybody should be, you know, operating with Sefer Mishpatim. So if there's something that's, you know, most basic and elemental and also halachically mandated for all people, it's Mishpatim, it's Choshev Mishpat. And the fact that, you know, Parshas Mishpatim is probably the single most difficult or impossible pshat to decipher of all Torah Shebichsav without Masorah, to me at least, you know, is not a coincidence. in terms of establishing the indispensability and the need for a Masorah, even in the most universalist and elemental and halachically mandated, right, shared area of halacha. That's a I wouldn't say it's a side comment, because it is important for what we're talking about in a bigger sense. But just regarding Rabbeinu Yonah, so that would have been the example that would have come tripping me off my tongue. But what's fascinating about Rabbeinu Yonah is he gives an example. He says, well, we wouldn't know that Nezikin is included in Gezel, you know, as a lav, you know, if it weren't for the Masorah. So what's striking about that is, who said it's even true, and where does it say that in the Masorah? Right? When I'm not sure if the yeshiva is learning. You say we're not learning Bava Kamma next year, right? Supposed to learn Sanhedrin? So, well, it's a good akdama to either Sanhedrin or Bava Kamma, actually. But, you know, it's, you know, what's the source of Isur Nezikin? Is there a source of Isur Nezikin, basically? You know, when I learn Bava Kamma, that I usually start with that issue. You know, is there a mitzvah? Is there an Isur? Is it just a quid pro quo? That's my sheer hakdama. So maybe yes, maybe not. Next year we'll see. So one of the things I always try to quote is Rabbeinu Yonah, who thinks that you know, Gezel includes the Zikin. But, you know, that's not pashut at all. And there are people who think that there is no makor, or it's, you know, Yishmerenu Ba'alav, which they see as an imperative, or it's based on V'Aftal Re'achu Kamocha, or Gemilus Chasadim, the Ramban and Kudrastina de Garmi. This is by no means obvious. There's no Gemara. There are some Gemaras that speak about the overlap of Nezek and Gezel. Again, if we have an opportunity, and we do learn it next year, we'll talk about it. But what Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's almost like Rabbeinu saying, like, this is a Pashut example, you know, that proves the thing. You know, there's Nezikin is part of Gezel. Not according to most Rishonim, right? So I think it's just perfect, you know, it's ironic, but it's perfect, in that, you know, Rabbeinu Yonah's global understanding of Nezikin and of Gezel, his understanding of Torah Shebaal Peh, is that, you know, Nezikin is a subcategory of Gezel. That's his understanding, right? In a way, in other words, the dimension of, you know, of the continuing, development in a good way, evolution, you know, progress, let's say, of Torah, which is accomplished by virtue of the fact that we don't just have Torah Shebitzav, but we have, you know, this continuous effort to try to understand it better, you know, and piling on insights off other insights. I have to be careful, obviously, but you know, that whole idea, which is why, you know, Torah never stays static, you know, because the order you see things matters, and you know, who your abeim are matters, and what your personality is and experiences are. All those things can illuminate things, and one little illumination can ripple across a system, can make a huge difference. You know, I always like to, you know, you can illustrate it in many ways, but you know, that's again, one man's you know, hishtadlus and ein som chanal aneis, another man's, you know, lack of bitachon, right? It can depend very much on subtle things in your perspective. You know, it's there's Eidus Shabbatla Miktsasa Batla Kula, and there's Pagin and Dibure, you know. I don't say it depends on which sugya you learned first, but, you know, your perspective can be very different, you know, depending on where you're coming from. So for Rabbeinu Yonah, for some reason, it was like a Davar Pashut, such a Davar Pashut that it's a great example of Torah Shebaal Peh, you know, that Nezikin is a function of Gezel. And I like the Shita, but it's certainly not, you know, part of the, you know, self-evident Masorah that, you know, that everybody subscribes to. Till Rabbeinu Yonah said it, as far as I know, you know, no one said it quite that way. But that's perfect, because that really, you know, accentuates what Torah Shebaal Peh is all about. If you're Rabbeinu Yonah, and you know Shas, and you know Makshava, and this is what you do, you know, this is how you define yourself, you know, so if you've concluded that, you know, this is what it is, that's just a great example of the concept of Masorah. And basically, that idea is, you know, is the reason why we can take a Ramban and say, he didn't say exactly this part of it, but let's take, you know, 70% of what he said, And, you know, according to some other mahalach he has, or what's, you know, in light of some other illumination, maybe we can say this better, or we could approximate, you know, the system's goals better. Maybe we can take the Lashonos of the Ravid in the Bali Nefesh. We're not denying, you know, that, you know, there are a couple of lines there that go in a different direction, but if the Yesod HaDvarim is about the existential bond between husband and wife, so maybe instead of illustrating it by saying, you know, that we're dealing with an Aver and, you know, and total control, maybe like some other Rishonim say, you know, a better way to say the same thing, but to take, you know, even more, you know, appreciation of the development of the notion, of the bigger notion that's being, you know, projected, is to say that, you know, there's a certain affinity and unity of purpose, and the existential bond, you know, expresses itself, you know, economically in other ways where you don't want to drive a wedge, and so on and so forth. So, on the one hand, you always want to be aware and acknowledging, you know, what really is being said, but the idea that you can, again, you have to have experience in this, and you have to have a Mesorah of your own to do it, and, you know, sometimes you're wrong in doing it, and sometimes you're really pushing things forward and developing them better. And again, there's a difference between the authority of halacha and what's legitimate and what's, you know, it does really better approximate the total evidence, if you think so at least, then this becomes justified. But all that is rooted in this notion that the, you know, that the Torah was intended to be transmitted by Mesorah, you know, with all of the dangers that that implies. It also generates a tremendous level of responsibility, but it also opens it up, right, to getting the best from, you know, the inclinations of individuals, of, you know, the opportunistic, let's say, application of, you know, being exposed to certain currents. You have to know what to filter out and what to, you know, capitalize on as well. You need to be one of the Chachmei Mesorah, or at least, you know, trying to get there to do this properly, obviously, otherwise you can have caused tremendous corruptions. That's why many times it's just, you know, Kibel vs vs vs. But sometimes it also means you know, a new wrinkle in a Derech HaLimud, you know, Kibel HaMasar, and sometimes it means new insights, like that Nezikin is part of the Isser of Gezel, and sometimes it can propel you, you know, once you understand the rippling, you know, takes place, and you understand X, it also then, you know, has the domino effect on Y and Z and A and B and C and so on and forth. That's why Torah is something which is never static. By definition, it's something where you know, there's continuous progress and understanding. Okay, so we'll stop here. What I want to pick up with, I want to speak about a little more with this idea next time. You know, the idea of Rabbi Akiva, of course, the story in Menachos, and a little bit of, you know, Mashi Talmud Basik, you know, Ne'emar L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, which is obviously connected to this idea. And then also to speak next time a little bit more about the idea of Mesorah in the area of Avos, meaning in Midos. Because just like you would think that, you know, Torah Shebichtav would have been standalone explicit in Mishpatim, right, so too you would think that a Mesorah is least necessary in the area, of course, of ethics. But since most of Avos is about Deos and ethics and things of that sort, it's just fascinating that the Mishnayos chose to introduce the idea in its most explicit way in this context. I want to speak a little bit about that next week, and then after that we'll speak about Heaven Masunim Badin, Haminu Talmidim Harbe, and Asus Yag Vatam.